Welcome to Things I Wish I Knew, the podcast from Thinking Faith, a work of the Jesuits in Britain. I'm Julia, I'm in my early 30s and I used to live in a Jesuit young adult community. We all live hectic lives and often don't get time to reflect on what's happening both to us and around us. This podcast is meant to help you to take a moment to stop and think about where you are, where you're going, and where your relationship with God fits into it all. Every week I meet a new guest who tells me about something they experienced which changed their life forever. By talking about the things they wish they'd known, we'll explore the idea that God is in all things. And we'll talk about the part that faith plays in navigating life's challenges. Today I'm speaking to Veronica, who's part of the Jesuit Young Adult community. She is originally from Argentina, but was living in Canada. And at 25, she moved to London. Veronica's a reflection of seeing God in all things, taught me to trust in God's voice in the small moments. So, Veronica, what was it like moving from Canada to London at 25?
Do you know what? At the time, it was really fun and it didn't seem odd or strange. And looking back, I think, wow, 25 is really young. I think maybe 25 doesn't sound, you know, you feel very old and you feel autonomous and independent. But actually looking back, I was 25 and I had some friends from university, but let's just say I kind of had no real friends, no real relationships tying me to England. So looking back, it was kind of a leap of faith.
So what made you move?
Yeah, it's a funny story. I think it's like how God plants seeds along your path. But I was in St. Andrews in Scotland doing an exchange, and there was a man who was there pitching a graduate trainee program in a like really interesting company. And I thought like, ooh, that sounds so fun. I want to do that. And I went to the Career Center right after that talk the next day. And I said, like, I want to work in London and I want to work at that company. And the Career Center guy was like, okay, well, so does everyone else. And I'm like, no, but you don't understand. I actually want to do it. He's like, okay, you're going to have to do this, 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 this. And from that moment on, it was London or bust. And that was my big dream. And I got an opportunity to move to London and to work at a company as an intern for 6 months. And 6 months turned into 11 years so far.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so when you got to London, because everyone talks about it being quite a big city. Mm. Actually, when I was walking here, I heard someone going, London's such a big city.
Yeah.
Was it quite an isolating experience at first?
That's a good question. Thankfully, I feel like I don't really have memories of the early days anymore. And I say thankfully because I think it probably was. But I just remember being so nervous. That's like the one thing I remember distinctly. Feeling like I was on probation in like a life sense. I don't know why. I think it's because I wanted it so badly to all work that I just felt like I had to be good, keep my head down and just like one foot in front of the other. I was lucky because I had a lot of kind of help, like a lot of like guardian angels along the way looking back. I think at the time I maybe didn't really see it, but now I do. So for example, I moved into a house run by nuns in Hampstead, and it was all young adult girls. Some of them young professionals, some of them kind of living and working their first jobs in London, others in training. So they were like junior doctors and lawyers. And there were also girls who would just come for a few months to like study English. And that was like a home away from home because all of us were in the same boat. We had all left our friends. We'd all left our families. We were all in this cool big city. And there were some things which ended up being the reasons why, like, after a while, I was like, okay, I'm ready to leave this place. But at the beginning, were really comforting. So, for example, we had a curfew, which was 10:30 on weeknights, which was actually kind of a killer because, you know, like, sometimes you want to do cool stuff, or sometimes we were at work really late and I would always cut it fine. And then on weekends, it was 11:30, which was like awful. And I remember people used to know like, oh, she needs to get back to her convent at 11:30. And I was like Cinderella, like leaving parties early. Also because it was in Hampstead, which for those who are familiar with London, it's on the Northern Line and it's about like 45 minutes from anywhere else, especially if you're like quite central or somewhere south.
Yeah.
So to get there for 11:30 means you had to leave at like 10:30 and anything good starts at 10:30.
Is that because all the I imagine the sisters are like locking their doors and
yes,
wanting to make sure they're all safe and
exactly. It was because it was like family, basically. And they wanted to make sure that you were safe and you were in. And of course, you could like sign out and say like, sisters, I'm going to my friends for the weekend or whatever. You had to let them know. But if you hadn't let them know, then the assumption was 10:30, you're in the nest. And if you weren't, it's because they'd stay up and they'd worry about you. So it was those little things that, you know, made you feel, gave you like the comforts of home within the wider context of like the big, exciting, scary city.
So what did you do when you left the convent?
Well, by that time, I actually lived there, believe it or not, 3 years, which is like, wow, how? But it was like the cheapest rent in London and it included food. And actually, the people were so fun. I made so many friends there. But it got to the point where I was like, okay, I have enough money and I'm a bit grown up now. Time to move. So yeah, but it was very formative and it was really lovely. And it was definitely a part of my London experience that I look back on fondly, even though at times I hated it.
I feel like that's always the case. Even if you like have a negative experience at a time, you're like, when you look back, you're like, oh, that wasn't so bad.
Yeah, totally. Because you forget all the
It's the same about it being like rose tinted glasses, isn't there?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, yeah. So how did you come across Farm Street?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So again, looking back, it's like, I kind of remember, but I don't have the full details. There was a girl at work, funnily enough, who we were there working one late evening. And for one reason or another, and I don't remember the conversation, but we got onto religion. And basically she asked me if I was Catholic, to which I said yes. And she said, oh, you know, there's actually a church near here, which I go to, my family goes to. I'll bring you a brochure one day. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And I thought it was really weird because you don't normally have those conversations at work. And lo and behold, a few days later, she showed up with a brochure for this church. And I put it in my purse and I kind of forgot about it. I kind of ignored it, but I knew it was there. And I find that lots of things kind of work like that. It's like, it's kind of circling around you, but you're not quite ready to action it. For one reason or another, the church that I was attending in Hampstead, it must have been a Sunday where the schedule just conflicted and I couldn't go to that mass. And I thought, oh, okay, well, there's that other church. I can go there. And that must have happened two or three times. And at some point, I stumbled into the young adult mass, which is at 7 p.m. on a Sunday. And it's catered towards young adults. So when I walked in and just saw young people, I thought, like, ooh, this is cool.
So before we get too much further, I feel like I should clarify. The Farm Street Church is a church.
Yes.
And it's a church run by the Jesuits.
Yes.
And it happens to be for us the church that is literally next door to us as we're recording this.
Exactly.
But at 7 o'clock on a Sunday evening, there is a young adult mass.
Yes.
So mass run by the Jesuits for young adults.
And it's been, as far as I understand, growing for like 21 years or something. So it's pretty
more
established.
Because we had the 21st birthday last year, 2024. So it must be now 22 years old.
Yeah. So running for quite a while and attracting more and more people each Sunday.
So you came across the young adult mass by accident.
Yes.
And did you then start coming regularly or how did you get involved in it?
Yeah, great question. So stumbled upon it by accident and thought it was really cool that there were so many young people and then just kind of kept coming, but not as a resolution, like I will go every Sunday, but just each time a little bit more, each time recognizing people more and who the priests were and feeling more familiar. And then from there to actually it becoming like my number one choice place to go to mass. I don't know, just time and routine, I guess.
So what made you stick with the young adult mass or made it your regular mass?
I think that sense of community, the sense that it was the same people every week and that you could really rely on that and that anything could happen during the week, but you had the comfort and the security of like Sunday evening. I know who I'm going to see. I know who I'm going to be with.
So why do you think it's so important for young adults to have that sense of community?
I think we all crave it. I think, you know, knock on wood, a lot of us grew up in loving families and it's innate to us, that sense of belonging and that sense of mattering and the sense of people knowing who you are and knowing what you bring to the table and conversely, you giving that to others in the same way. And we crave that sense of, yeah, belonging, especially in a city that otherwise, you know, you can be so anonymous and autonomous and, you know, no one really knows you.
Mm. I've been going to the young adult mass post-lockdown, post the pandemic, but you actually started going beforehand.
Yeah.
So how did the pandemic change that experience for you?
I'm so glad you asked, because I think one of the great strengths of Farm Street was, especially the young adult group, was COVID. I feel like that was a really pivotal moment in so many of our lives, where we saw things that either thrived or just kind of fell apart. And I have this great kind of visual, you know, in the movie Titanic, I always refer to this because it is exactly how I saw it at the time. You know, when the iceberg hits and the compartment doors start to close, and it's like everyone's kind of like running through and trying, like just slipping under. At work, it was very viscerally like that. Like things were closing, 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 mm-hmm. closing. The resources that we would use, physical locations, things that we could do, it was all starting to become like dead ends. And by total contrast of Farm Street, especially the young adult group, everything was like opening, 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 opening. And it was actually really fun to see both sides and how each, you know, was able to adapt. And Farm Street adapted so quickly. And I really think that that's due to Ruth Holgate, who at the time was one of the leaders of the young adult group.
We had her on the podcast.
Oh, okay.
A couple of episodes ago.
Yeah. And I think it's because she's very tech savvy. And I think that those are kind of her natural gifts. But she was one of the people who seemed to get the hand of Zoom faster than anyone else. And she was able to kind of work the program and be creative and manipulate it in a way that it took weeks for other groups that I belonged to kind of be able to do that. So I remember as soon as lockdown started, Farm Street went online. The young adult group went online. And they had these like online liturgies where we'd all, you know, have like Lexia Divina or have a reading, and we'd have like beautiful music and reflections and time for sharing. And she would even put us into breakout groups before anyone else really knew what a breakout group was. And that was really an anchor. I actually spent lockdown in Canada, 3 months in Canada. And I felt so connected to the young adult community. And so many things that we started during the pandemic, which were pure initiatives out of us like feeling alone and craving each other's company, still remain to this day. So, for example, we started the online rosary group. There were five of us. And basically that's because we wanted to do something and we wanted to pray together. And Father Jim accompanied us. He was also one of the leaders of the young adult group at the time. And that continues now, and it grows over the years. It's just been going from strength to strength. And similarly with lots of other kind of initiative and groups, Farm Street was just so ahead of the curve and such. Yeah, I think anchor is the best word for it. Such an anchor in a time of total turmoil. I even remember Father Jim's my spiritual director. We had our spiritual directions sessions over the phone or over Zoom. There was even a retreat for young adults over Zoom during the pandemic.
There was. And during that Lent, during the Easter, because that's actually how I ended up getting involved in the young adult ministries in the first place, because I got invited to that young adult retreat online.
Yeah.
And you got to have like spiritual direction with someone every day and reflect as it was in Holy Week as it was coming ahead.
Literally.
So what did it mean for you being part of like a community in a time of such uncertainty?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. It gave certainty. It gave anchoring and certainty in a time where I feel like so many people were kind of running around with their heads cut off. Farm Street was just like very secure. And I use Farm Street as kind of a metaphor for God. It's like he knew all along who he was. Come good or bad weather, he never like falters or doubts. And yeah, and I think that was a really formative experience to see firsthand, like, come hell or high water, like, God's gotcha.
So now we are 5 years later from the pandemic. How does the young adult ministries fit into your life?
So it continues to grow, and I think we continue to grow with it. A lot of those initiatives that I talked about still go on, but I would say the main focus is the young adult mass. And that remains kind of the jewel in the crown of all of the programming that it has. It was actually really cool because Audrey, who directs the choir, when we were first allowed back in the church to have services, she played the same song, which was the last song that she played at the last Mass before lockdown. And I thought that that was really beautiful, that sense of that constancy of God. And I think it was actually really, really special because for a lot of us, we hadn't heard live music in months. So no one wanted to leave the church. No one wanted to leave the Mass. I remember the priest gave us the blessing and dismissed us and stood by the door and all of us just stayed in our pews. We didn't want to move. There was a sense of we're home, we're together again. The music was beautiful. And I remember saying to Audrey after, imagine we had known when the pandemic started and we thought that our lives were going to fall to pieces. Imagine we'd known that we'd be back a few months after in the same church, in our same pews, her playing and us listening to the same song that kind of played us out. I think so many times in life, it's you kind of play that game where it's well, God, if you just reassured me or if you showed me, then I'd be okay and I wouldn't doubt and whatever. And it's time and time. Well, I don't know if it is for you, but time and time again for me, it's that always happens. That pattern always repeats itself. You doubt, you doubt, you doubt. You're come on, God, please, just this one time. And he always pulls through.
He does always pull through. Yeah. I remember we all were sat in lockdown going, right, life is going to be so different when we get back out.
We had such
such dreams, such hopes.
Apocalyptic visions.
But just even I was I think everyone was okay, we've learned to slow down. We're going to remember to slow down.
Oh my gosh, I had so many resolutions.
And 5 years later, I think we're busier than we were the same. Pre-pandemic.
We're probably worse.
So how does the YAM community fit in for you now?
Again, just that sense of constancy and that sense that whatever happens, that group is there. We've all become so much closer as a friend group that it's not even just about the young adult community anymore. It's those are your friends. That is your family. So we do so many dinners and so many outings and we just hang out all the time. And whether it revolves around something religious or not, that is your core group of people who you trust, you count on, you rely on, and who are just fun to be around.
I get the absolute privilege of seeing you most Sundays, and seeing how God works through you.
Yeah.
But I kind of want to ask you, how does God work through you?
Yeah, great question. I think I'm still figuring it out. And there's a great Ignatian kind of phrase of the fingerprints of God, or when you can see God at work. And there's been so many times where I notice the pattern over and over and again, and I'm something's up. But I find more and more I see him at work in my kind of opening up to other people. I find that he helps me so much. It comes so naturally for me to then want to do the same for others. And more I see myself as kind of a conduit or a bridge to bringing his voice into the world. As conceited as that sounds, because that sounds really conceited, but in just tiny, tiny, tiny ways where I know what a difference he's made to me, and I find it such a joy to be able to do that for others.
That's what we're all called to do anyway, isn't
yeah.
it? To be Jesus's hands and feet in the world.
Yeah.
Tell me about the makeup artist.
Okay, so just to contextualize for people listening, they're what is the makeup artist? So we had a little pre-chat, and I mentioned some key moments where I can see God at work, and I have so many, but I just kind of thought this one is one that kind of really encapsulates what happens a lot. There was a big event that I was getting ready for, and it demanded basically having hair and makeup done because it was quite a high profile event. And this makeup artist came to my house, and so I had no connection to this lady whatsoever. And she was coming over, and I don't know if this ever happens to you, but sometimes you kind of think about your environment based on who's coming. So when my friends are coming over, I don't mind that they see the Bible open and all my statues or whatever, like my images of Mary everywhere. But sometimes I think like, oh, maybe people find that like a bit much if like they don't come from a faith background. So sometimes I kind of like start to tidy. And I remember thinking like, well, I don't have time. She's just going to have to love it. and she came in and she was great. And we met and she did my makeup and we had like the typical chat that you have about whatever. And as she was packing up to leave, she looks at my little statue of Saint Therese and she goes, oh, who's that? And I remember looking at Saint Therese and being like, okay, I see what you're doing. Fine, I'll go with it. And I thought like, okay, Saint Therese is at work. Let's see what she does. And I was like, oh, that's Saint Therese. She's like one of the first saints that I was introduced to. She's amazing. She's super, super powerful. And I started like talking about her. And she was like, wow, you know, I actually went to a school called Teresa, but it was actually Teresa of Avila. And I was like, oh, that's actually another saint. But she just started like coming up with all the stuff and she felt so much affinity to what was happening. And so we kept chatting and she's like, you know, I used to pray, but I don't really have any faith background. And actually, I've been thinking lately how I should maybe get back into maybe like into developing my spiritual life and praying. And I was like, okay, cool. Well, if you want to pray. And now that you've met Saint Therese, there's this novena, which is this like 9-day prayer, and you pray it every day for 9 days, and I can send it to you, and she will grant you what you ask for. And the way that you'll know is she'll give you red roses or just roses in general. And she was like, oh, that sounds so interesting. And I'm like, yes, but like really ask for what you want, because she's very, very powerful. And like on your first go, she'll really honor that. And she was like, okay, well, I have something I'd really, really like. And I'm like, cool, go for it. And then she was actually going to New York shortly thereafter. And we talked about going to St. Patrick's and the fact that they have a relic of St. Therese there. Anyways, lo and behold, I send her the screenshot of the prayer from that I found online. And the phone was kind of quiet. Then this message comes in and she's like, oh, I'm in New York, I'm in St. Patrick's, and look. And she takes a photo and she's like, I went to visit St. Therese, and she shows me like the relic and stuff. And then she goes, and look at what happened. And she sends a photo and she was engaged, and there was this bouquet of 12 red roses. Wow. And she said, what I most wanted to was to get engaged to this man. And I prayed so hard for it. And then to have him propose and have the red roses there, she's like, was such a huge confirmation. And she actually messaged me since, this was a few years ago, with like further updates, which I think are a testament to her faith journey continuing. And it just kind of shows you, like, at the time you're like, oh, I'm too busy to put away like a statue of Saint Therese. And the whole time Saint Therese like, no, 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 don't worry. I've got plans.
And it's also that thing of quite often we can do it because we don't want to talk about it, and it's a bit, I don't want to say embarrassing, but like we don't want to have that kind of faith conversation where like this isn't that setting, it's a professional setting. But actually God can be in all of those moments.
And he is, and he delights in it. And I think the more you go out on a limb, the more God's like, yeah, let's do it. And it's like your project together kind of. And again, that kind of story has happened so many times that I start to see the pattern, which is why as soon as she said, oh, who's that? I just knew straight away, oh, Saint Therese is just going to go do her thing. And each time I sweat because I'm like, I'm telling these people to ask for the impossible. Like, you better deliver, because this is your chance. This is your one shot. Like, it's, you know, they've maybe left the faith or had no faith, and this is the opener. And she never fails. And so many times it will be situations where I'm like, oh my gosh, that person is like, good luck, Saint Therese. Like, the stakes are high. And she always delivers, and it's crazy.
Do you have any other stories you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, I have tons. There's one recently which really sticks out to me more than anything because it keeps developing. That one started basically at the Jubilee of Young People in Rome this year. So we're in 2025, it's the Jubilee of Hope. And a lot of us went to Rome for this special moment with the Pope and with each other. Essentially, they had set up about like 200 tents, and there was confession and anyone who wanted to partake could. And we were waiting outside in our line, and I saw this girl, and she looked about my age, and she was crying. And she was wearing sunglasses, and I could tell that she was crying because every once in a while she would put a Kleenex kind of underneath her sunglass and wipe her tears. And she was kind of pretending that she wasn't. And I just remember seeing her and just seeing myself in her. Mm-hmm. And I know that whole crying and pretending you're not crying, but actually secretly just wanting the world to acknowledge the fact that you're really sad and to like come hug you. And I felt this sense of like, go talk to her, go tell her like God loves her. And I had this like whole discussion with God, like, yeah, I really want to do it, but like, I don't know. Like, what if that's not what she's crying about? Or, you know, like, I don't know, but I really, really want to, but I'm not brave enough. And person in front of her went up and I thought, okay, now or never, because it's going to be her turn next. And I just remember saying to God, like, oh, I don't know if I'm brave enough. And God's like, come on, go do it. And I'm like, okay, fine. And I remember taking that first step and like, oh, that's it. We've committed. Now we have to go. And I just went up to her and I was like, God loves you. And she just looked at me and I was like, God loves you. And I think he really wanted you to hear that. And she just looks at me and I'm like, I think you need a hug. And I just hugged her and she just like started crying. And we were like laughing and crying together because it was just such a bizarre but special moment. And I went back to my queue and it was her turn to go up for confession. And so she went in and I was waiting for mine. And I thought like, oh, I wish I could keep talking to her. But my confession carried on. And then when I came out, she was there and she was talking to my friends. And I thought, oh, she waited for me. That's epic. And we started chatting and she doesn't speak English and I don't speak Italian. And we spoke for about half an hour. I think it was like an epic game of charades. And my friends were like, what is she talking about? Because they've been talking for like half an hour and they don't speak each other's language. But I think when God's in it, you do speak each other's language. And I, that language of tears and what I saw in her, I knew it because I knew it in me. And that was a really, really beautiful moment. And we stayed in touch. And it's crazy because the last few months, that was in August, each time I think of her, she'll randomly message like as I'm thinking of her and vice versa. It's just really special. Anyways, I out of the blue, she messaged yesterday as I was prepping for this interview. And I said, you know, do you mind if I actually talk about the story? And do you mind if I tell people on the podcast? And I'll just refer to you as the beautiful Italian girl. Don't worry, I won't say anything. And she said, and I'm going to read what she said because I think it's super powerful and I think it speaks to God at work. She writes, oh, how wonderful. Of course you can. I am honored. From the bottom of my heart, your words are always full of love and my heart smiles when I read them. When you speak on the podcast tomorrow, please testify that the Italian girl had her heart in the grip of death and emptiness, that so much pain made her doubt that there could be any hope for her life, that she doubted that anything beautiful could ever happen in her life again, that it is a sin not to believe that a word of love can touch your life, and that an equally beautiful Spanish girl told her, God loves you, reassuring her as if she knew everything her heart was feeling, and her heart was reborn, and that God spoke to her through her deepest wound, that God is not disgusted by our darkness. It is important to understand that God's love passes through the love of our brothers and sisters and through their attentions. It seems trivial, but it is often forgotten. Many people around me forgot this years ago, and this leads to darkness. And then she says, you're Spanish, right? I'm like, yeah. And I just think that that is so powerful because we're both random girls. We didn't know each other. And we have this now this beautiful friendship because of tears and because of seeing someone and thinking like, I know that. And I just felt so drawn to just tell her like, God loves you. Cause that isn't that exactly what you want people to tell you when you're in the same boat? Yeah.
So what does seeing God in all things mean to you?
I think just seeing him so alive and so vibrant. And I wish that I could say that I've had some kind of Damascus moment where like you have this flash of lightning and this voice that tells you your mission, but I haven't, and I have a sneaky suspicion I won't. So I think the seeing God in all things is the seeing the tiny moments of him at work and giving enough credit to those and enough confirmation to that's him and that's his hand and that's his voice, rather than yeah, than hoping for that kind of epic biblical moment where your life changes. It's more like a kind of gentle hand-holding along the way.
And I recently was talking to someone about this, about how often you hear those stories of like what I'd describe as boom moments. Like,
which moments?
Boom moments.
Boom.
Boom.
Ah, okay.
So it's where like you hear people talking on stages and they say, and then boom, God did this. And then suddenly I had faith.
And my life changed.
And your life changed.
Yeah.
And I remember growing up always being like, well, I already believe in God, so that's not never going to happen to me. And
I know, that's so depressing.
No, it was.
Yeah.
But eventually I realized I had like these little like click moments.
Totally.
And it wasn't like a big bang and yeah, suddenly I was full of faith. It was like God just like clicked in my life instead.
Totally. Totally. And I think he knows what we need, right? So St. Paul needed to fall off his horse and go blind for 3 days. Okay, cool. I don't. But I could say I've been blind for like years because, you know, you also need.
And Ignatius, yeah, they always talk about the cannonball moment.
Yeah.
Which is where cannonball came and hit his leg, and then he was in bed rest for a long time.
Yeah.
And it was in that time that he really found his faith as well.
Yeah. And totally shattered his dreams and his hopes for what he wanted, what he thought his life was going to look like. And he had to kind of recalculate. And he thought it was the end, and actually it was just the beginning.
And actually, maybe I'm really grateful that I don't have to, maybe I should touch wood on this, that God doesn't decide to do this to me. But at the moment, he's not had this moment where he just needed to give me a cannonball to change my life.
Yeah.
He's gently nudged me.
Yeah.
So how do you align your life with God's plans for you then?
Oh, Julie, if I had an answer for that one, we wouldn't be here. No, if anyone knows how to answer that question, then they have made it. I think the whole point is to not know. I think the whole point is that you're still learning. And I think the whole magic of it is that you're still just a kid and your dad has plans, and it's kind of not for you to know the whole plan yet, because he's still just guiding you, and he'll let you know what you need to know when you need to know it. I think like a good father. And I think that if now he told me like, okay, this is your plan for your life, I'd be like, what? Like, how's that going to work? And it's too much info. But how do I know that it's aligning to what I think is where we're going? I think it's those small confirmations. And I think it's also the fruits, right? Like, you can judge the tree by its fruit. I think there's so many things that happen in your life that you're able to discern. You've been discerning for long enough that you're able to see, yeah, the fingerprints. Like, does that seem like it's of God? Does that kind of taste and smell of God? Does that sound like God? And just like in a relationship, you know, if my mom all of a sudden were to say something on my WhatsApp chat that didn't sound like my mom, I'd be like, that's not her. That's not in character. Who's there? Who's doing that? I think it's kind of the same. You start to, you know, like the sheep will know the shepherd's voice. It's like, yeah, you do start to just know. Doesn't mean you don't doubt. Oh my God, I could have like a PhD in doubt. graduate with distinction. Doesn't mean you don't doubt, but you start to learn more and more what the path looks like and where to keep going, keep walking.
Does your life look like what you expected it to look like when you were graduating?
Ooh, that's a great question. It definitely looks like exactly what I wanted it to look like, but I think it looks better than I thought it could have been.
So if somebody is like deciding what to do in their life, what piece of advice would you give to them so that they can hear God's voice in it?
I'd probably give the advice that my brother gives me, which is chill out. whenever I'm like stressing about whatever, like how's that going to work or how's that going to happen or how are those 50 variables that I think are completely essential to that thing panning out going to line up, he's always like, chill, just chill. And I think that is true. Like, let's put it into context. Like, God is your father. That's all you need. That's it. Like, you're in the best hands possible. The creator of the universe made you and adores you and delights in you. That's it.
That's really powerful to hear. So what do you wish you knew about seeing God in all things?
I think I wish that I could like enjoy it more in the moment rather than, I think, well, I'll speak for myself, but I think we do have a tendency to like enjoy it once it happened and like looking back because we know that it all worked out. But I think the real trick is to enjoy it at each step, especially when you're not sure how it's going to end up, because the pattern teaches you that you do know how it's. My dad has a great piece of advice that he always gives me. Watch the pattern, don't watch the moment. And what does the pattern teach you? And I often find whenever you're like in a really tricky moment, okay, yeah, that's the moment. We acknowledge it. But what is the trend? Like, what does the pattern tell us? And I think whenever you find yourself in those moments where you're like unsure and you're like, am I seeing God in this? Like, is he in this? Okay, the moment might make you doubt, but what is the trend? And put it into that context.
Do you journal? Because I find journaling really helpful for that as well when you're looking at trends and patterns.
Totally. I've been writing in my diary since I was like, I think the first entry maybe is like 6 or 7. Yeah. And there's so many times where, I don't know if this happens to you, but there's so many times where I'm like, I just need to write. It's like, I need to write. And as soon as I write, it's done and it all comes out. And there will be times where it's months or weeks that I don't. And then there are other times where it's like twice a day. I'm like, oh my God, I need to write.
What are you grateful for?
Oh, I'm grateful for this. I'm grateful for another stepping stone where you can see God at work and yet you don't really know what the next step looks like. And I'm grateful for the journey, the fact that like I wouldn't be here had I not gone on a plane at 25 with like blind ambition of like my London life and this new chapter. And I'm grateful for the fact that God knew then all the things that were going to happen and that he was there holding my hand the whole time. When I felt it, when I didn't, when I would rage against him, like, why aren't you here? And the whole time he's like, I'm right here. I'm grateful for all of that. I'm grateful for the journey.
Thanks for listening to Things I Wish I Knew. I know this episode is going to stay with me because of the powerful stories of Veronica witnessing her faith to others. How about you? We'd love to hear how Veronica's story resonates with you. And why not also tell us if you're facing an experience you wish you knew how to look at differently? It might just be something we can help with. You can find out more about this and other themes at thinkingfaith.org. Thank you again for listening. I hope you'll join me again next time on Things I Wish I Knew.